another confession to make. I'm your fool. Everyone's got their chains to break. Holding you. Were you born to resist or be abused? Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? Are you gone and on to someone new?
Hi, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballengee, and it's good to have you here with us. You probably haven't heard my voice in a while, so it's great to be talking again. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, all that stuff at Golf News Net. You can find us on your Roku TV, soon for Apple TV. We're still working on that programming. And you can find a lot of our work not only on GolfNewsNet.com, but also on Yahoo Sports' Duffelball Golf Blog. And we are presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's odds each and every single week for our PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, European Tour, sometimes Champions and Web.com Tour odds posts. And it gives you a great idea of where the money's moving, how the odds are changing in real time, and you can see where kind of the smart money is going over the course of the week. So that even if you are in a place where you can't bet legally, you can still get a good sense of what you're doing with your fantasy game and where the smart money is going in the people that do it for a living. So check out BetDSI.com. Okay, so for this week, we have a lot to kind of talk about. I mean, we haven't talked in a while, so I wanted to give a little bit of a brief update on my life to kind of explain why we haven't done this in a while. So as many of you know, GNN is more or less a one-man band. One-man band in that one person works full-time on the site. We have plenty of great contributors, ranging from the Golf Getaways guys, Darren and Mitch, whose podcast you should listen to Jay Flemma, whose podcast you should listen to John Lattin and Eric Hart and Brian Orr and down the line of great guys who contribute every week, including Ethan Zimmon and Joe Book, who are doing great course previews and fantasy stuff for us. I mean, Joe is in the top, I think, 20 in Yahoo Fantasy Golf this year. The top 20. That's crazy good. And he gives advice each and every week. So we have a lot of great contributors. However, all of that stuff kind of filters through me. And so I post a lot of it, do a lot of the planning, do programming, all kinds of different things that really need more than one body. But so that's kind of part of it. And the other part of it is that I went to Florida 2 weeks ago and went for my annual golf trip. It's called the Old Greensburg Cup, sometimes just the Greensburg Cup. And that's a house we rent in Orlando. And this year, for the second consecutive year, last year we had 10 guys. This year we have 12 guys. Some are my in-laws. Some are friends of in-laws. But we go and for the 8 years I've been on the trip, go to Orlando and for 5 days play golf. And for three of those, we have a competition called the Greensburg Cup. We also have a Cousins Cup Challenge, which is more modified Stableford. And the Greensburg Cup is match play. So I've been a two-time champion of the event. I have the lowest handicap, unfortunately, and it went lower. Had a great week, great time. Didn't win either thing, but I kind of said the last time we did the podcast and the last time that I did a two off the first, which is kind of our new video feature that we have. Our new video podcast is also available on iTunes. You can subscribe. It's like a 3-4 minute video that really details the two most important stories of a day, and we're starting to make that more part of our routine. But part of that, as kind of all part of that, I mentioned, hey, we're going to do some stuff in Florida, and it's going to be great. And then I kind of drank a lot of beer and moonshine and Crown Royal and stuff over that week, and those things didn't materialize. So I apologize for that. I don't like to go more than a couple of weeks without doing a show. And last year, we got in such a good habit of doing a show, like every week, especially during the really important weeks of the year. And we want to be able to keep doing that. So kick my ass if I don't do a show, please. I like doing shows. I love talking about golf. I love doing this. And I want to make sure that I'm not doing a disservice to you by not giving you the shows and the content and the podcasts that we should be doing. So Happy to be doing this again. So I wanted to start this week with the Arnold Palmer Invitational, because that's the event going into the week. And there's been a lot of talk about how strong the field is or is not for this tournament. The first one since Mr. Palmer passed away at the age of 87 last year. You had players kind of weighing in from all spectrums of the PGA Tour. Guys like Billy Horschel, guys like Ernie Els. You had other players weigh in as well to say, you know, this field should really be incredible. It should be the best Arnold Palmer Invitational ever. And it should be that way because this is the first one after Mr. Palmer's passing. Every person who was on the PGA Tour owes their career to Arnold Palmer. You should go and pay homage by playing in his event if you are invited. And in concept, I don't disagree with that sentiment. I mean, Arnold Palmer did make the PGA Tour possible. In fact, he basically formed the modern PGA Tour with Jack Nicklaus. And there has to be a lot of appreciation that these guys and the modern tour should have, not only for Jack and Arnie and Gary Player and the other forebears, but also for Tiger Woods. And you know, Tiger Woods is obviously still alive. He's not even close to dead. He's 41. His career might be dead, but he's not. And so it's a little bit different when you say, I'm not going to go play the Quicken Loans National. You're like, well, I mean, you're upright. I mean, you're not playing a lot of golf, but you're upright. So it's different now. It was different when Mr. Palmer was alive. And it will be different now that he is deceased. And I hope that what doesn't happen is what has happened to Colonial and what's happened to the Byron Nelson Championship, which is now the AT&T Byron Nelson. Those tournaments suffered tremendously after the passing of their namesakes or their hosts. And now they're just kind of there. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But they're defined by something else. They're not defined by that human being, that great golfer that is there to shake your hand or that represents that championship. It's just different now. And the Byron Nelson has worked hard to get an identity that doesn't necessarily shy away from the fact that this was Byron Nelson's tournament, but that it acknowledges that this tournament moves on with really his name only on it. Peggy Nelson isn't really a huge part of it because she doesn't have the same cachet that her husband did. It's just different. And the same thing is happening in Colonial, where obviously Ben Hogan's name really wasn't ever part of it. It was just Colonial, and you knew that was Hogan's alley, so you know it's Hogan's thing. And for years and years and years, it was blah, blah, blah at Colonial to remind people, hey, Colonial's code word for Ben Hogan. And now it's not. That name's not even in the title. It's Dean and DeLuca Invitational, period. End of story. And they're trying Dean and DeLuca, which is an upscale grocery, in case you've never seen one or heard of one until last year, like me. You know, that for them, it's not the experience of trying to attach to Ben Hogan's legacy or livelihood or anything like that. It was just, all right, we got this tournament we're going to sponsor. We're going to plunk a whole boatload of money. We're going to make it a foodie experience. And I can't imagine Ben Hogan was a foodie. I'm sure he was just happy to eat food. And the Hawk probably didn't think about that a whole lot. So that really doesn't honor his legacy. So now we've got an Arnold Palmer Invitational without Mr. Palmer there to greet the players, to be tournament host, to basically be everything for the tournament. And from the hosting standpoint, the tournament has found five people to host. And that includes Annika Sorenstam, former Secretary of Homeland Security Tom Ridge, who was a good friend of Mr. Palmer's. They obviously spent a lot of time together in Pennsylvania. You have Curtis Strange. Got others who are involved. And You got others who are involved. And they're major champions. They're big figures in the game. But they're nowhere even close to the stratosphere of fame and importance as Arnold Palmer. And so they realize they've got a big job in front of them. They need to be able to attract high-quality players to Bay Hill. they've got an increased purse. The PGA Tour, perhaps knowing what was going to happen, not when, but knowing that it could happen sooner than later, worked with MasterCard to increase not only the profile of the tournament, giving the exemption an increase from not only 2 years to 3 years, it was kind of already there, but jacking up the purse to close to $9 million. So it puts it almost on plane with a World Golf Championships event, and you get that extra year of exemption. So it's basically a mini WGC. It's just below a WGC in terms of purse and what you get from it. And because it's an invitational event, you've got a limited field. You get 120 guys. And you have, overall, a pretty good field. If you look at the current world top 25, you basically have half of them in there. Now, the problem is people tend to move their eyes up in the ranking, and they look toward Dustin Johnson, who's not there and doesn't typically play there. You've got Rory McIlroy and Jason Day in there. Jason Day is the defending champion. Rory McIlroy started coming to this tournament a few years ago at the behest, the personal behest of Arnold Palmer, who said he would break McIlroy's arm if he didn't come 1 year. And McIlroy was like, well, I don't want my arm broken. I'm coming. So he answered the King's call and has been coming since. You don't have Jordan Spieth there. Spieth would prefer to play the WGC match play next week in Austin. Obviously has an Austin connection, went to UT. That makes sense. And then we'll play the next week in Houston, which he likes to do to prepare for the Masters. So given the schedule, the API just kind of doesn't fit. You've got Justin Thomas, who would play otherwise, but he's got a wedding obligation this weekend. So otherwise, he would have been in. You've got Adam Scott, who's seen some success of this tournament not come this year in changing his schedule a little bit. Phil Mickelson is not playing. And there are others you can kind of go down the line where, like, man, they're not here. Sergio's not there. Think about that. You know, there are guys like that who just, no, they're not coming. But if you look at the younger, particularly European players, European Tour regulars, who are in the top 50, especially the top 30 in the world, since the European Tour is dark this week, they don't have an event, those guys said, yeah, I'm going to play the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which I find fascinating. And the field has grown increasingly international, more diverse in recent years, which has been a good thing for the tournament, I think. But these guys from Europe were like, yeah, I'm going to take that spot. You're darn right I am. And they took advantage of their world ranking, and they're going to get in a killer field. And if one of them wins and they're not already a member of the PGA Tour, guess what? You won in the best way possible, shy of winning a major championship. You got a boatload of money, you want a big tournament, and you get a three-year exemption. Boom, 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 in. So it's a big deal for guys like Tyrrell Hatton and Alex Noren, and you can kind of go down the line of guys like that. Matt Fitzpatrick, keep going. And that's a big deal. So in one sense, you kind of look at the totality of the field and you go, that's pretty good. I mean, the exaggeration of the death of this tournament, death of this field, before we've even played one time without Mr. Palmer there, has been it's just too much. And this is going to be a good tournament. We're going to have a golf course that is in probably the best shape that it's been in 10 years, because they have changed the greens again to the proper Bermuda. They did it right. The greens should be in good shape. The course should be in good shape. Valspar was in amazing shape last week, by the way. Innisbrook had never looked better on television, in my view. And so you're going to get a good golf course. You're going to get a good field, not a rowdy crowd at first, probably, but over the weekend it will get to be normally rowdy as Orlando can be. And hopefully you get a great finish, just like we got for Valspar, which I thought was a lot of fun to watch. And there will be that awkward moment when someone wins, and if it's someone who knew Mr. Palmer, look over, and he's not there. And I'm sure there will be some emotion for that person if that's the case. Either way, it's going to kind of be emotional for the entire tour and for the broadcast crew, for everyone involved with NBC and Golf Channel. I mean, Golf Channel's backyard is Bay Hill. Bay Hill hosts people who stay there for appearances on Morning Drive. Their studio for Morning Drive is named after Arnold Palmer. He was an investor, and he got the channel off the ground with Joe Gibbs, not the racing guy, but the investor. And so there's going to be a lot of emotion this week. So what about next year? And I think this was an important question. I saw Randall Mell ask this, too, on golfchannel.com, and it's a good point. We're thinking about 2017. Mr. Palmer hasn't been deceased yet a year. He died September 25th. He hasn't been deceased yet a year. And there's obviously a lot of emphasis on how do we kind of honor his memory and his contributions. And the first thought is, how do we make the API the best it's going to be in 2017? What I would suggest to people is that the things that happened at Colonial and Byron Nelson, they didn't happen in that first year. They happened in years 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And so long as Arnold Palmer's name is on this and the field strength is going to be pretty good because you got a good purse and you've got a 3-year exemption attached to this. So those are good things. Those are things that will prevent the fall off that we saw at Colonial and the Nelson. But the PGA Tour schedule will not allow this field to be much better than it is. And I say that because these guys are ultimately professional golfers. This is their livelihood. This is their job. Which means for a lot of the guys who are in the top 50 in the world, they're already in the Masters. They want to make sure that they are prepared for the year's first major, which is more important than the Arnold Palmer Invitational in the grand scheme of things. And so for those guys, they want to be able to prepare for that first major how they need to. At the same time, if you're a top 50 player in the world, you have a lot of opportunities. You can get in any event at will. You can set your schedule. And that includes getting into 2 World Golf Championships events in a 5-week stretch. You get into WGC Mexico. We've got actually a 4-week stretch. You've got Tampa this week and back to another WGC again in Texas, the match play. Those are guaranteed paydays with a lot of world ranking points and a lot of money. And so wouldn't you rather, if you were one of those top players in the world, would you not prefer to take the free money in those events, even if they aren't necessarily your favorite courses, which Austin Country Club was great, and so was Club de Golf Chapultepec. I thought that was awesome to watch that on TV. But if you also know, hey, you know, Innisbrook really isn't my cup of tea, neither is Bay Hill. Maybe I don't like the shot shape types that are required. A lot of draws you can hit. You got to kind of work the ball a little bit in places, but a draw is very helpful. If you don't like that, that's kind of a problem. And maybe you don't like the greens. I mean, maybe you're not a Bermuda guy. Maybe that's just not your thing. You want to go putt in Texas and try those things out. You like the setup a little bit better at the Country Club of Houston or whatever it's called for the Houston Open. Fine. Whatever you come up with. But for these guys, they aren't primarily concerned about honoring Arnold Palmer. They're primarily concerned about getting ready to win a Masters. And that's going to come at the expense of this tournament, the way the PGA Tour schedule is currently conceived. Now, it's changing. It's going to change. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind it's going to change. When the PGA Tour floated that trial balloon of, hey, we might work with the PGA of America to move the PGA Championship from August to May, everyone was kind of like, I mean, I guess, that's fine. And then they said, oh, and we're also going to move the players back to March. Because after 10 years of doing the players in May, they've realized TPC Sawgrass just works better in March, like it used to. And on top of that, it gives them a great lead now 40-plus years into the players, into the Masters. It may not be a major, but it could be the first big, big, big event of the year and lead into the major. So that's their choice. That is the PGA's Tour choice, so long as they get the buy-in from the PGA of America, which it kind of sounds like that's going to happen. Steve Elling reported, if you follow him on Twitter, Elling, he reported that he had 2 sources of the PGA of America, 2 officials with the PGA of America. And I don't know if those are like people who have named titles like secretary, president, vice president, but 2 officials with the PGA of America who told him that move to May is happening, which means the move to March is happening for the players. And while we can do an entire podcast about the exciting possibilities and some of the detriments of moving a major championship from August to May, moving the players means there are now four events in that Florida swing, including an event in Mexico. There used to be five events in Florida on the PGA Tour. Now there are four because Doral's out. But for all intents and purposes, Mexico is part of the Florida swing for the foreseeable future. It either starts it in 2018-19, or something like that. But let's lump it in there. So, if you've got all these events and you've got to move one event at least to accommodate moving the players back into March, why not break up the Florida swing? And that's a column I wrote this past week. Kill the Florida swing, because it gives an opportunity. We don't need swings anymore on the PGA Tour that are just so geographically concentrated. It doesn't work that way. I mean, the Texas swing used to exist. I mean, you have five tournaments in Texas right now on the PGA Tour. You've got Colonial, the Nelson, Houston, San Antonio, and the WGC Match Play. Five tournaments in Texas. None of them are played more than two in a row. And we've got the Florida swing that held on for so long, where we've got four straight tournaments in Florida. And they did that in part for geography. Because of the time when they started doing the Florida swing, everyone got around by car, and it was way easier to get to tournament sites that were fairly close together by car or RV or whatever, train, than what we got now, which you can just hop on a private jet and fly. Or the tournament sponsors a jet and you fly. Or the tour sponsors a jet and you fly. It's different. So why not break up the Florida swing and say, okay, we've got a separate series of events in Texas. We've got an Asian swing that is now expanded to three events starting this season. We've got a Mexico event. We've got a new moving major, a new moving pseudo major. Let's kill the Florida swing. Let's start the year in Florida. Let's start in January in Florida. Let's put two events there to pop the schedule. Or you could start with the WGC in Mexico, because that's got to move. You can't have that many WGCs. You can't have two in a four-week stretch. That's dumb. Doesn't make any sense. So, we're going to move one of them. Let's move Mexico. Move the Match Play, too. I don't care. Whatever you decide. But you're moving one of them. We've got these Hawaii events in January. We've got a Tournament of Champions, and we've got the Sony Open in Hawaii, the Hawaii Open. And what we have with that is a coupling that needs to exist. You can't have, like, 1 week in Hawaii, go somewhere, and come back. It just doesn't work. It's also that the Tournament of Champions doesn't work as a concept now, because it's just not the start of the season. It's the start of the calendar year, so it's every person that won since the last one. Well, that doesn't convey any kind of importance then. Then you can have it in May or August. I mean, who cares? So what I would suggest is we break up the Florida swing into two. We put the players in March, put two other, if you want to keep those three events in, three Florida events in March, fine. And you can figure out how you want to King Solomon that up. But then you take the Hawaii events and you say, okay, we're going to start the season in Hawaii. Tournament of Champions starts it. Hooray. Sony Open in Hawaii is the next. That's a full field event. We kick off the season there in October. Because there is never a time when you don't want to be in Hawaii. I mean, really, there's not. It's great. It's perfect all the time. Go there. Start the season in October. It's just when it starts to get cold. People who are watching the NFL in northern climates are starting to put on more jackets, and they might be threatening snow. They don't want to think about that. They want to think about beautiful sunshine, pretty equidistant days, or equal length days, and just enjoy the scenes. It's pretty close to January in terms of that. Now, Florida is a pretty decent substitute for Hawaii. I mean, it's not quite the same, obviously, but it's not bad. So I think from a logistical standpoint, it makes more sense to do that. That way you can have a good field for your WGC. Tampa would probably be that second event to start the season. It's still, or start the year. It's still a transitional event. It's not going to ever have a huge, great field, but it would get a pretty good field in Tampa, since there are a lot of players who are already in the area who domicile in Florida. And then you could have Honda and the Arnold Palmer Invitational in March. Those can have great dates. They can live unto themselves. You basically have Jack's influence at Honda making it Memorial Tournament South. You've got Arnold Palmer's legacy and influence on the API, and you've got the players. It's a big month, but if you have those three tournaments and then kind of sprinkle in one not-so-big tournament, then that's a good month for the PGA Tour. That's a great, great lead into the Masters. Why wouldn't you do that? You could figure that out where you take Austin out, and you can have one more tournament in that month. You could start the month at Jack's place, and you go players, API, and then Houston, and all of a sudden we're at the Masters or something like that. But we could work out those logistics. But that's the way I see it, because there are certain tournaments on the schedule that just deserve to have a good field. And there are certain tournaments on the schedule that have a good field regardless of whether they're a good tournament or not. Of course, the four majors are great tournaments. They will always have a great field. The WGCs are good tournaments, but they're not great tournaments, by and large. They're big money and points grabs. Because they're big money and points grabs, they have great fields. They're not necessarily a great tournament. And you've got a tournament like the API, and Honda for that matter, that are really well run and deserve the great field because the name attached to it. And so I would like to see those do well. And yes, I would be willing to upend the PGA Tour schedule to make sure that's possible, so that just after this year, we know that the Arnold Palmer Invitational will have a good field and no one will have an excuse to not show up because the PGA Tour schedule is too stifling that they can't make room on it to go and play the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So I know we spent 26 minutes basically talking about why the Arnold Palmer Invitational matters, but that's how much I care about it. That's how much it should matter to the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour schedule. And they did what they could, given the scheduling that they have kind of locked into place in the future for this year. There's more that they can do, and there's more that I feel like they're going to do. So for people who are worried, particularly PGA Tour pros, who are worried about this week, who are concerned that this week could be a symbol of things to come, that's not it. That's not the case. It's not that way. Don't think of it that way. Think about the long-term and the long-term benefits of what we're seeing. All right, just one quick thought about the Valspar Championship. I just have to talk briefly about Patrick Cantlay. It's really exciting to see him playing well again. He's got a great story. You can read about it either at Golf Newsnet. Golf Channel's got a good story from Ryan Lavner. The San Diego Union Tribune, I believe, also had a good story on him. Orange County. Harold also had a great one. Orange County Register, excuse me, had a great one on him. So he's been through a lot. You know, fractured vertebrae, basically told to stay off of golf for 2 years in hopes that it heals, and it does. And then his friend is killed in a hit-and-run accident, which Cantlay sees 10 feet in front of him, sees it happen, and he gets into this position where he's like, now I can play again. He finishes T48 at Pebble, which is fine. That's a good start in your comeback. And he gets a sponsor exemption into Valspar, and he takes advantage. And he earned all the money he needed to earn to retain his PGA Tour and satisfy a major medical extension, which is really impressive. I mean, there you can go down the list on PGAtour.com, and they have one of the guys who are in major medicals. And you look at the... It's kind of daunting. I mean, you have to earn a certain amount of money, your FedEx Cup points, and a certain number of allocated starts, or you just lose status. It's gone. It's just like that. Like, hey, welcome back. Your career's over. And it's remarkable that Patrick Cantlay did that. What's also remarkable to me is that he is a freaking robot. And he gave reporters, and not that you're obligated to give anybody anything, but he gave them bupkis while going through this entire process over the weekend, where it quickly became clear to people on Saturday that something special could happen for Patrick Cantlay, that he could either win if he were to beat Adam Hadwin on Sunday in the final pairing and earn his card and a two-season exemption, or that something special could happen and finish his solo second and he satisfies the major medical. And he just kept going, yeah, I'm just trying to hit one shot at a time. I'm just trying to stay with the process. I believe in my game plan. Yes, I do stretches before the round. No, I'm not going to tell you any like sob stories about anything. Yeah, I'm still the same guy. No, you're not going to get me to cry about Chris Roth, my friend who died. Like, he was just, he's kind of dialed in. And in one sense, as a reporter, you're like, oh, come on, tell me something more interesting. But in another respect, as a competitor, I'm like, good for you. You are so locked into what you're trying to do, the goal that you have set, that you can be incredibly boring. And maybe that's just who he is. Maybe he's just boring by nature. But he could be incredibly boring and feel okay about that. And I wish him luck. I hope he continues to do well. I hope this is a catalyst for him to go through what he seems to have gone through personally and with his back injury. To get to this point is a big accomplishment, and what he can do, the game that he demonstrated at Innisbrook is cool. It's fun to watch. It's really good. He hits the crap out of the ball, and he putted great. I mean, if that guy comes through more often, he could be maybe a late bloomer because of circumstances, but he could be the guy that we thought he could be in 2010 and 2011 when he was an amateur, lighting it up as an amateur as part of the unpaid set, shooting 60 at the Travelers Championship, taking the 36-hole lead there, all those kinds of things that kind of had us thinking maybe this guy's going to be something special. Sometimes you just don't know when you're going to be special, and sometimes life changes and things happen that you just never expect, and plans get delayed or dreams get deferred, and it's not always that you get to pick them back up and get to resume them in hopes of trying to achieve them as you originally intended. And I think that's where Patrick Cantlay has been given a gift and an opportunity to try to realize his dream using the talents that he has been given and cultivated, and I hope the best for him. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Next week, and there will be a next week, not like 6 weeks from now, whatever it was, we will have a recap of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We've got the Founders Cup on the LPGA that could be very interesting. There's no European Tour event this week, so we'll get ready for the match play, too. We'll have the seating starting to get ready for that as well. So until then, if you listen to us on iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. Head over to our page in iTunes. Just type in the 19th Hole Golf Show. Head over, give us 5 stars. Leave a comment. If you give us a 5-star review and a comment, we will read it on the air, even if it's laced with expletives. We'll do that for you. And if you aren't already a subscriber to the show and you're listening to the first time on Audio Boom, please check us out on iTunes or whatever podcast subscription service of your choice. And check us out on Roku TV or YouTube. All the videos post to either place. So if you want to watch on your TV, great. If you want to watch on your phone or somewhere else where you get YouTube, awesome as well. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening to our show, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole.